You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, we are going to dive deep into some NBA draft stuff that has happened over the course of the last week, weekend, I don't know. Matt Penny is here. Penny, what's going on, man?
Doing great. I love this little midweek, early week podcast. Get started. A lot of good games on docket this week and still a lot of stuff to talk about.
This is an important podcast because you and I are actually looking at each other right now. We are recording video, hopefully to go out live. I don't know if this will end up just being a test. If you don't see this video, we sucked on camera, clearly.
I don't know if that was a takeaway.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out what we're going to do here in terms of video, basically. Probably up on YouTube in some regard. At the very least, we will have clips going out. But it's good. It's good to see your face. It's good to see the inside of a bathroom in Boston.
Yeah, I lock myself in. I'm in a hotel. There's a bathroom behind me. It is nice. This is like the next level of confirming we're not catfishing each other. And
that's true.
This isn't like a Disney villain voice modulation you've just been dealing with via the internet for the last 2-3 years. So yeah, we're kind of, this is as close as in the flesh as we've gotten to this point, which is exciting.
This is a dream. This is what we're looking for. Okay, the docket today, we're going to talk about the Scoot Henderson breakout in the G League, which has finally occurred over the last week. We're going to talk Dyson Daniels, Jaden Hardy, Marjon Beauchamp, Michael Foster as soon as we're done with Scoot. Then we're going to move to Memphis, Imani Bates, Jalen Duren. We're going to talk a little bit about the Gonzaga-Duke game that occurred over the weekend, I guess. It was Friday. Sure. The holiday days blend together, don't they?
It did. Someone had a good post. It felt like Sunday for like 4 days, which was fine. Like the actual Sunday scaries didn't hit till actually Sunday. But yeah, we lost all sense of time during those 4 days.
See, like the problem for me is that I don't have a sense of time to begin with because I'm in Australia living on American yeah. schedule.
Right.
So I don't know what day it is most days. And then yeah. Thanksgiving hits, which isn't a holiday in Australia. And we do it anyway because we are, like, my wife is half American and I'm American and her father's American. So we have a nice little day, but I mean, it's been rough trying to get back to schedule.
I do give credit to you, though, because for all the time differences and alternating daylight savings, I think we've messed up once in terms of, hey, it's tomorrow at 8 versus whatever yeah. it is. So for you to be able to navigate that, and I don't think twice. You say, like, hey, it's 4 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock. I just show up and start talking nonsense. But you've been on your game, so you got to give yourself credit for that anyway.
It's what the calendar's for, baby. That's what you got to yeah. do.
You have a clock. You have a watch on that just has, like, California time. You work off that.
Seriously, I do. I literally have my computer set to California time. Like, it says right now that it's what? I think it's like 1:30
in
California. Good. Yeah. So, what a mess my life is over here in terms of work. But I get done with watching tape around 5 o'clock and I get to watch movies like King Richard right after. And that was a strange little movie that I watched.
All right.
Well, we'll talk about it at the end.
It is. It's on my list.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Scoot. The G League is doing like this weird kind of like showcase schedule season, because I think that the G League is kind of trying to navigate COVID in the way that it best can in order to get guys prepared for call-ups to make the G League Ignite situation work. And because of an injury, Scoot Henderson just hadn't played really for the Ignite all that often. He has started to get real minutes, and over the course of the last week, he's played three games. He played the Santa Cruz Warriors, and then they played a back-to-back against the Stockton Kings over the weekend and on Monday. Scoot Henderson in that game against Santa Cruz dropped 31 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. In the first game against Stockton, he had 23 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. In the game last night against Stockton, he had 27 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Scoot Henderson is dominating the G League right now. And those numbers, like, they somehow understate what it feels like watching him on the court. It also, like, understates his impact, because he is coming off the bench.
I didn't watch him today, but I looked at the box score and I was watching clips. I said, this sucker's still coming off the bench. Like, good for him, but he's been the spark plug off the bench, where they're down 20, that all of a sudden they're back in it because of that momentum shift he's able to do.
Literally what happened in the Santa Cruz game. Like, they were down, I think it was like 57-38 or something. Mm-hmm. They put Scoot in, and his first stretch in the game was like okay. It wasn't amazing or anything. But then they just, like, it seemed like they just told him go. Like, they said, hey, we're going to give you the ball. We're going to put it in your hands. Just go make shit happen. And it was fucking amazing. Like,
it was staggering. And he had that 30-point game on 10 of 15 shooting. It just never felt forced either. Like, sometimes guys will have 30 and it's a force. Like, I was talking to someone earlier today, like, Franz Wagner had 27 last night. But if you watch the game, like, end of the game, he was kind of searching a little bit. It was okay. Yeah. He was trying. But, like, Scoot, it's, like, all within the rhythm of what he's doing, and that's the craziest thing. And this kid's 17 years old. Like, he's supposed to be a senior in high school, and I watched him on tape, on film last year, because it was a funky COVID year. He's playing, like, Class 6A in Georgia. He's averaging 32 points per game, just kind of doing what he wanted, playing to the crowd a little bit. He'd have a dunk, he'd go flex, he'd hit a three, go yell at somebody. So it was hard for me to take him, like, totally seriously, because I hadn't seen him in a real evaluation-type setting. Mm. So you watch a couple of G League games, and Jaden Hardy's had his struggles, so we'll get to that. So then his first game, he had like 8-6 or something like that. Solid, like kind of what I expected. You saw this hype and all these stories, and then when they actually let him go, like you said a little bit, it was incredible. I mean, just the way that he approaches pick and rolls and the different reads that he has, it's not like a quarterback where it's like, here's my pre-snap reads. It's like he's like seeing the play in the air and then naturally, instinctively making the move. There's nothing robotic about how he splits the D, then spins and looks opposite. And another thing I'll say, and as smooth as he is and not forcing it, that first game he had 5 assists. He probably should have had 8 or 9. There was a few plays where he over-dribbled. He hit opposite in the corner. Guys just missed a wide-open three. Michael Foster missed a bucket right around the rim. So just very exciting as a player and a prospect. And for him to do this right now against NBA competition, that Santa Cruz game, he had Jonathan Kuminga on ice skates. He was switched on to Jeff Doughton. Like there's guys that are NBA-level players that he's doing it against. This isn't college. Yeah. This isn't the overtime thing where the competition can be shaky. This was against bona fide guys, and that was the most impressive thing for me.
Yeah, like that Santa Cruz team is pretty good. Like you said, like Jeff Doughton was a great defender at Rhode Island.
Very good.
Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody. Moody didn't play a ton in that game, but like Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga were lottery picks last year.
Yeah.
And he made Santa Cruz at times, frankly, look silly. He had an incredible feel for exactly how to approach ball screens.
Yeah.
He would take a side ball screen, and you'd think that he's going to go around into the middle of the floor, and then he'd throw a wicked left or right crossover and reject it. And not just try and attack the rim, and we're going to talk about a player in a little bit here that I think is still struggling with some of these reads. He knows exactly what his reads are. He's looking at the help defender the entire time. He's hitting that cross-corner kick out with ease. He's seeing that angle so simply. He's seeing lob passes. He's seeing the roller. He's seeing short rolls. Like, every single thing imaginable that Scoot Henderson needs to hit. Nothing about it is forced. He's scoring 31 points, 23 points, 27 points. It's efficient. It's smart. It's within the flow of the offense. Sometimes it's out in transition. Like, he had a play last night where he, like, goes right to left crossover, like, carries the ball like a running back, almost, like, in his right, in his left hand, and then jumps and in midair switches it to his right hand on the left side of the rim and throws it down for a dunk with, like, the easiest explosive pop that you'll see. I mean, he is explosive. He is reactive. There's just no... I don't know. Like, there are faults, and we'll talk about the faults, but, like, out of ball screens, making reads, getting to the basket, attacking the paint, getting a foot in the paint, there is no real weakness there, I don't think.
No, he's powerful, too. It's not one of these guards that gets in a lane, and you hope he jumps up. It's like, well, I hope he can get to the free throw line. And he does. Like, he does get to the free throw line. But he's going there to finish. He's going there to dunk. And the steals, too. He's a very good on-the-ball defender. Those three games, he had three steals, two steals, four steals. And I think it was Santa Cruz. It was like a two-point game. Actually, it was a tie game. It was a ref show at the end. They called a loose ball foul for free throws to end it, which was insane. But he was there. He was in the mix. He has to close. He's playing 30 minutes despite not starting. The jumper, I guess, is the one thing that we'd say we're not worried, just hesitant, just pause button a little bit. The mid-range stuff looks better. Like, his legs get a little bit wide, but it looks smooth. Totally. He's comfortable going left to right. Coming up ball screens, pulling up right away. He hit a three or two in a couple of those other games. He said he's worked with a trainer to get better. So we'll often overuse, like, scratching the surface, but I truly believe that this kid is still just figuring out, in a good sense, at being so young and putting up these numbers in three consecutive games, and there's still a lot to get better. And everyone's just really excited about him. And unfortunately for us, he's a year away from the draft, so we'll be talking about him ad nauseum until then. But a nice name to kind of put up there at that first tier of the 2023 draft, which seems wild.
Yeah. So I've talked to some scouts over the last few days, and for a long time it's been, you know, quote unquote predetermined that French center Victor Wembanyama is going to be the number one overall pick in the 2023 NBA draft. He's 7'4" and has incredibly long arms and has real ball skills, some ability to score, some ability to shoot, incredible defensively. I mean, you go back and you watch the U19 game he played as an underage player last summer against the United States, against guys like Chet Holmgren, Jaden Ivey. It was remarkable. He was absolutely phenomenal in that game. Now, it's not a done deal that he goes number one at this point. Scoot Henderson has genuinely put himself in the mix, and I think, frankly, I would take Scoot right now as the guy in that class. It's early. We're still, 18 months away from that draft? So
there's some time on the clock.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen here, but, I mean, Scoot, Wembanyama, like, these guys would go number one in 2022 pretty easily, in my opinion. And what we've seen from Scoot so far is nothing short of remarkable, I don't think.
It is. The only thing for me to be Debbie Downer a little bit is I don't want to be prisoner of the moment. Prisoner of the moment. Come on. He's been awesome. He's been awesome three games. If you just hit pause and we reverse this, rewound this to July or August, we would be saying the same exact thing about Victor Wembanyama. We'd be complaining that he didn't win MVP. It was Chet, despite USA winning gold. Victor was the guy. Everyone's going nuts about his blocks, his length, his fluidity, getting up and down the court, shooting a little bit.
But here's the difference, though, between those two things, is Scoot now has shown it against a super high level in the G League. Like, even Wembanyama, he, like, got some minutes last year at high levels. But for the most part, like, it was U19. He played in, like, the City League, like, in Paris with Usman Deng. And it was not a super high level of competition that he was ever going against. The competition we're seeing Scoot play against night after night now consistently is much higher than anything we've seen from Wembanyama so far.
Absolutely.
Up until this year.
And when you play FIBA and you're playing Chet Holmgren, who is at least discussed as a top pick, he might be two or three. I don't think he'll get beyond that range. So he kind of played who he played, and then this season started slow. I think he's been injured a little bit, so he hasn't even played internationally that much this calendar season, I guess is one way of putting it. But it's fun. It's good to have like another name at the top, and now we're all rushing to see the latest clips and highlights and people saying that Scoot Henderson's the best prospect in the world and has great bloodlines, his family's all high-level athletes, seems to have his head on his shoulders, approaches the game the right way, works on his game, gets in the gym with his trainers, just seems singularly focused on improvement. And if you're already doing that and scoring 31, 22, and 27 in stride at 17, which I keep beating over the head, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. I don't know how else to say it.
The fact that he's 17 is insane to me.
Yeah.
The three games of tape he's shown so far this week are better than any tape that Jalen Green showed in the G League.
Right. For three games, yes. For sure.
Yeah. Like, these three games are better than any singular game Jalen Green played last year in the G League.
Yeah. Top of my head, like, I would agree with you. But the very least, the way it showed, and it wasn't like I was rooting or hoping for Jalen Green to do this or that, because I think prospects are just going to either figure out they won't. But he did. Like, he slowed his game down a little bit. He learned how to use screens a little better. He learned to limit his dribbles and his actions. And Scoot's just like, I just like watching him play. Just like knows how to play basketball. And you're not rooting for anything because you know he's going to make some wild but under control play and maybe tries to dunk it, maybe throws it over his head for an assist. It's different brands of basketball. But we had this kind of like, but sort of like a negative light on G League Ignite a couple pods ago, just because those guys hadn't really lived up to expectations, the high level names. And now that Scoot is healthy as a 2-year guy, which at the time seemed ambitious, it looks like it's worth every penny.
Well, and let's talk about some of the other guys, because I think that I have some worries about what we've seen from Jaden Hardy so far. Some of it's been really good. When he has been focused on attacking the rim, his body control, his footwork, his ability to find little creases around the basket has been incredibly impressive. I've really, really liked what I've seen from him in that respect. Too often, he's willing to settle for really, really bad mid-range jumpers that are contested. Mm-hmm. And are seemingly outside of the flow of the offense oftentimes. I'm not going to say that it's been a totally negative experience. I think that would be unfair. But I think that I don't know that scouts have been blown away by Jaden Hardy yet, I would say.
No, they can't be. And I'm starting to worry a little bit, too, as we've seen some guys with games under their belts now. We're readjusting our big boards, and people are updating their mock drafts. He's shooting 32% from the field. He's shooting 26% from three, basically a one assist to one turnover ratio, which isn't great. And he's shooting out there. I mean, he has a shooter's mentality. The last game I watched he played, he missed a shot coming off a pin down. The next possession, he pulls up before the play's even set, like in the Like, what are we doing here? Let it develop a little bit. If his man goes under a high ball screen, he's shooting. He's not thinking twice. Just there's times where he plays, and it's like an empty stats guy that he'll get 20, but, like, what did he have to do to get 20 points? Whereas Scoot Henderson, like, he's the guy, in terms of production anyway, that I thought that Jaden Hardy may be. So for him to still be kind of, like, fourth or fifth around people's drafts, it's you're betting on him to kind of, like, turn the corner and make it work. But when you have a guy coming off the bench that's significantly better, your eyes are just drawn to that other guy. So I'm not hitting the panic button, but I'm hovering a little bit just in terms of like that first tier of prospects, first guard, when Jaden Hardy's playing so well and people are building momentum the other way, like which way is he going to go in a week or two?
Yeah, so like Cam Thomas has averaged, I want to say he's like over like 35 a game so far in the G League. And Cam Thomas is a year older. He has a year of experience in college and has had another summer to work on his game around NBA people. There's a lot of Cam Thomas there in Jaden Hardy's game. And I have some concerns that Cam Thomas is the better version of it in some respects.
Which isn't the worst thing, but it is to me if you're drafting fifth.
Yeah, I was going to say, like this.
I like Jaden Hardy. He was all over my board. I mean, I think he ended up being 20th, but there's a time where I was saying I would take Johnny Juzang over him. There's a time I would say I took Josh Christopher over him. I was wrong, and Cam Thomas is a lot better, but sort of still that one-track-minded scorer who can really fill it up. You have worries and concerns about what else he can do, and thus I wouldn't take him with the fifth overall pick.
Right, and NBA teams didn't with Cam Thomas, right? They took him 27, something like that, right in that range. So I think it's hard to look at Jaden Hardy and be all that enthused about what we've seen. Like, I've been a little bit lower on Hardy throughout the process. Like, I had him at, I think, 8 in the preseason, and I would probably have him around 10-ish right now. But that's purely what's helping him right now, I think, is that not many players have truly emerged
as
super high level players. So he's getting a chance to work through some of these issues without necessarily like falling and like catastrophically hindering himself. So I need to see more from Jaden Hardy. Dyson Daniels next. Well, it's interesting. Like, I actually like what I've seen from Dyson in regard to everything but, like, scoring. He makes an impact defensively at a really high level. Like, he's really, really good defensively already. Gets his hands into passing lanes. Really disruptive on the ball. 6'6" and can guard 1-3 very easily. I think long term, probably he's able to guard 1-4 once he gets stronger. Like, pretty good passer. Sees the floor well. They have him playing point guard. I don't really see that as his long term position necessarily. Yep. But he does have real passing instincts and does have the ability to handle the ball. I think his jump shot mechanics have improved a little bit. The skills that Dyson Daniels needs in order to be a good role rotation player in the NBA, he showcased all of those in the G League. And I think that in some respects, that's a positive. Obviously, you'd like to see him do more. But it has not been... I think not been as bad as what the box score numbers would indicate, despite the fact that he hasn't been all that productive yet.
I don't think he's a point guard. That's the first thing. And he's playing out of position a lot of times, and maybe that changes now with the emergence of Scoot and just say, hey, do that, run the wing, Hardy and the other one, let's just like play ball. I'm just worried about the feet as a point guard. Like, we've talked about Jeff Doughton. I am actually a Jeff Doughton fan, but he went right by him, like, a lot.
Yeah, he did.
And then when Dyson's actually handling the ball, they turn around and he just doesn't love pressure. Turned it over in the backcourt. He did use his size on drives when he said, okay, I'm not going to beat him. Maybe I'll spin a little bit, extend by the basket. Had a really bad like bounce pass entry feed to a turnover. You hit it on the head that with Jaden Hardy, with Dyson Daniels, I'm still like waiting for that second tier of guys. So like I've slid Jaden Hardy down to 8, and I have Dyson Daniels lower than that. I think way lower than you. I have him right now. I'm looking at my board at 21. But that
group... for what it's worth, I'd probably have him more in like the 15 to 20 range right now.
But that group, right? That 9 to 20-ish group right now, it's you're waiting for a guy to emerge. You're waiting for Max Christie to really do it or Bryce McGowan's to be more efficient or Keegan Murray to have a good game against a legitimate team.
Yeah.
You know, Ty Washington's been up and down. Matthew Cleveland, maybe. So rallying off these names, somebody has to go there. And I'll give Dyson the benefit of the doubt because he stepped into this role that doesn't necessarily fit his game. There is going to come a point in time, though, where it has to be a little bit more productive and efficient offensively for me to put him solidly in the lottery.
Yeah. And I think that's fair and reasonable. Like, honestly, like I said, like I think I'd have him outside. And I actually really like Dyson in his game. So let's go to Marjon Beauchamp, who I think has actually been, to this point, maybe the G League's biggest actual success story. Scoot has been great, but Scoot is just this like preternaturally talented human being who is like a freak show athlete and knows how to play basketball. Marjon Beauchamp, like the scouts that saw him last year at Yakima Community College in Washington, they didn't really see him as a long-term NBA player. They saw the length and the athleticism, but they thought he had a long way to go skill-wise. Whenever he was a high school recruit before he decided to go to Chameleon BX for training for that year, he was top 50 guy? Something
he was,
like that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, top 50, but everything he said is why the scouts did have intrigue to him long-term.
Right. And he gets to the G League Ignite, and he's starting. He's making an impact defensively with his length. He doesn't look out of place athletically, obviously. He's smart in terms of being a high-level cutter. I actually really think that Beauchamp so far has been a really, really positive outcome for the G League Ignite, because when I talk to scouts about him, they think he is somewhere between like 25 to 40, something in that range, having now seen him up close and having seen the growth in his game that has occurred.
Yeah, I'm scrolling here. I have him 30 right now. It was just a little, I don't want to say peculiar, but I was caught off guard when he signed with G League Ignite, because it's been the first player that took his path that went to junior college and then went there. So I don't want to say I forgot about him as a prospect, but he's a guy that went to a junior college. You just kind of assume, like, oh, he'll pop up at Washington State, or he'll be at Oregon State, and then he'll be in the Pac-12. He'll turn it on in conference, like, oh, yeah, I didn't know he ended up there. What was his path? So when he signs with G League Ignite, I didn't really have expectations. But they've been surpassed, if that can you can wrap your head around that piece of it, because he's done all the little things too. There's no diva about him. He's sort of like a junkyard dog type out there, cleaning up messes. There's some bad shots. He'll rebound. He'll work the glass. He keeps plays alive. Then defensively, he really rotates and he'll help. He'll try to take charges, block shots. In transition, he'll fill the lane, run and jump. There's a lot of stuff there that I feel like he's bought in more so than I thought, than I anticipated. When you see the junior college tape, when I saw the high school stuff, he was just used to being the alpha with the ball in his hands, and you kind of have like two and a half alphas, and he's okay playing third fiddle. And for being a rotational type of guy in that draft range, he fits the mold of what you'd be looking for.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for the way that he's gone about his path so far, and for the way that he's kind of forged his own trajectory, and for the way that he has gone about attacking the G League and showcasing the skills that NBA scouts are looking for from someone like Marjon Beauchamp. The swing skill here is the jumper. He needs to be a consistent 35 to 38% three-point shooter. There's just not really a way around it. We'll see if he gets there. I don't know if he will or not. It remains up for question, but if he does, he's going to play in the NBA for a pretty decent amount of time, I would say.
Yeah, totally. And if he's the guy that's kind of like the fourth signing of the G League Ignite, if he's sort of in that like Isaiah Todd-ish mold for we want you to be a first round pick, if you're not, he's been that and everything above that, I think, too.
Yeah, totally. Like I think there were probably even less expectations.
Right, he wasn't the headliner. It wasn't you had this bag to go get the best players you can. I don't think people thought that, oh, you signed Marjon Beauchamp, he needs to average 18 and 10 for me, this to be worthwhile.
Yep. Last guy, Michael Foster. I mean, he's putting up points and rebounds, that's for sure.
You're just going to leave me hanging with that. Yeah, if you look at box scores, he's great. The plus minus is terrible. Everything is great. Let's start positive. I do think he has sort of an NBA pace at times on the catch and the post. Like, he'll take his time and size his man up. I just don't like it when he catches it in the mid post. He pulls it out to create almost like his own backwards side isolation. He can play the five a little bit, like the top of the key, and attack and use that as mismatches. My concern is the feel. I just don't see it. Like, he makes awkward reads. I don't think he processes the game like particularly quickly. And defensively, he'll bite on shot fakes. He's slow to recover. Guys have no problem shooting over the top of him. They played Harry Giles, and Harry Giles was almost like surprised how much room he was giving him. It's like, I can shoot this. You should close out. he didn't. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't love his handle. Puts his head down. A stats guy. He's always going to have stats. I mean, I remember watch him at Hoop Hall with Hillcrest, and he had 35, and he's taking threes with a minute left. They're down by 20, so he's gonna get his points. I'm not super high on him as a draft guy. I've seen him some places in the 30s. I think that's pretty dang high.
Yeah, I would not. Michael Foster would not be someone that I'm particularly interested in more from a stylistic perspective than anything else. And from a feel perspective, like, you hit the nail on the head. Makes a lot of selfish-ish decisions. Makes some reads that I don't understand.
Know if they're reads. Yeah. We've traded a few clips back and forth that I don't know what the intention of this pass was. Where was this supposed to go?
Yeah. He's going to put up points and rebounds. That's for sure. I would like to see him... I think that the best thing Michael Foster could do, let's finish constructively.
Yes.
The best thing Michael Foster could do is focus really hard on playing defense, playing hard on defense, being an impact rim protector, and being willing to throw his body around in a positive way, work mechanically on playing vertically at the rim. He doesn't have the best tools necessarily to be like an impact rim protector at the center position. But that's going to be what he has to do. Like, he has a pretty thick chest. Like, I think it's pretty hard for guys to go through him. That's going to be his route to the NBA. He needs to be better at all of the things that aren't, like, star-level impacts.
Yeah, right now. Ironically, went through the same grassroots program as Kevon Looney. So it's, like, kind of try to do that. Try to be Kevon Looney.
Yeah.
Embrace that sort of role and... You can be an NBA center as undersized and play hard and rebound and box out, score on broken plays, and then maybe channel some of that inner Marshawn Beauchamp too. Like, we're positive about him because he's not trying to do too much, and he's playing his role and not trying to show he's a three and not trying to show he can shoot and self-create. Like, let the guards do that and step out and just make the most of your opportunities without sabotaging offensively what your team's trying to do.
Right, and if you remember with Kevon Looney in high school, I mean, this was a guy that – oh, like, is he, like, kind of a 6'9", like, almost guard? Like, he can attack the rim. He can go
right
in transition. Like, he's
That's the title of the YouTube video. Is this a 6'9 guard? And then you're going to click. Right. You're going to look at it.
highlight video.
Real evaluators look at it and say, no, he's not. But that's a nice move he made in transition. Like, you can still do
right
that. I don't think Jabari Smith is a 6'10 guard, but you got a 1-on-1 in the break, you want to put it behind your back and dunk, that's fine. Just don't totally do it in the half court all the time.
Totally, 100%. So let's go from the G League to talking about a player that decided to not go the G League route. But first, let's take a quick commercial break. Okay, we're back. Let's talk about Imani Bates and Memphis and Jalen Duren to an extent. They beat Virginia Tech at what tournament did they play? Was it the NIT tournament?
Yes, it was in New York, right?
I think it was the NIT season tip-off. That's ringing a bell for some reason. Played Virginia Tech. Beat that team by 8 points. They played Iowa State, lost to Iowa State by 12. I did not think they looked good in either game. Their athleticism defensively just kind of overwhelmed an under-athletic, by Power 5 standards, Virginia Tech team that, you know, has Keve Aluma and Storm Murphy and Hunter Couture out there. Those guys just, like, aren't amazing athletes by any stretch. Nyheim Aline is probably their best athlete as among the starters, at least, and he went for 21. Like,
yep.
The guy that kind of matched up best with them is the one that went off, which shouldn't come as a huge surprise, I guess. I have some worries about what we've seen from Memphis and Imani Bates so far. Before I get into mine, I will give you the floor to
thank you.
Jump in. Well, look, I'm happy to take it, but I want to
throw this grenade in the room and close the door. You can start by battering yourself in and putting rocks around your head.
You can take this positively. I'm good to be the bad guy on this.
I can do both. I can straddle. I've sort of been dreading this conversation as we have, and here's why. We have the cop out. He's not draft eligible. So, like, I didn't even have a line in my document on Amani Bates because I don't have to. We'll talk about him in a year. Hope he figures it out. Scoot Henderson has messed up a lot of people's worlds this week, and one of them is Amani Bates because they're in the same class. They're the same age.
Yeah.
And Scoot's doing against pros, and Amani's struggling against Virginia Tech and Iowa State. Amani's not been good. It's been a painful watch. He's really out of position playing point guard. And with all his touches and all his usage, he's averaging 1.5 assists to 2.8 turnovers per game. Not making the right reads. He's turning it over. The shot selection is questionable. He always goes back to his right hand. Even when he's driving left, he's like leaning back to his right for a finish. He just doesn't have that quick twitch, really craft or processing either. I think the move here isn't, and I'm not a basketball coach, and I'm not telling Penny Hardaway or Larry Brown and Cody Topper. Those guys are way smarter than I am basketball was. We need to get him on the wing. I know they don't really have a point guard. I don't know if it's Tyler Harris. I don't know if it's Alex Lomax. I don't know who it is. But that Iowa State game, I actually rewatched it this morning because I'm like, I got to go back. I don't want to just say this is my reaction off this. He had one play where he ran wide. The ball advanced to him. He pulled up and hit a three. Like, just do that. Like, don't overcomplicate it. He's also, I'm going to give him this benefit. He's 17 years old. He turns 18 in January. For him and his basketball development, I'm actually happy he's in college. Like, you can do the G League thing in a year. That's like life comes at you. This is life comes at you fast, not really fast. He's learning from Penny Hardaway. He's learning from Larry Brown. Take your criticism here as opposed to the G League where he would take lumps or 30 points a game at Yipsy Prep playing Mikey Williams and Vertical Academy, whatever it is. There's here at Memphis, there's a newfound level of accountability, but those guys are letting him play. They're letting him figure it out. I think for his own self and his own basketball future, and it's still very bright. He's still 17 years old, so I don't want people going crazy. He's better suited as a wing. He's not a point guard. He's a wing with very good vision. I just don't want him initiating the offense. And he just, you can see it's so forced that he feels like he has to make a play every time that he's over dribbling almost by, he thinks, necessity.
So I think where I'd push back on that just a little bit, because I think almost 100% of what you said is right there. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad he's in college. I think it's better for his development that he's in college. I think that it makes sense for his developmental trajectory to take his lumps here. I think that's all right. Are we sure he has good vision? Because here's what I would say. I think that sometimes he's a good passer.
Right.
I don't think he has good vision. And the reason that I say that is you watch him coming out of ball screens, and I don't even think he's looking at the help defender. Like, I'm just going to say, like, I don't think he's looking to see, okay, is the help defender coming over to tag the roller, or is he staying home on the shooter?
Right, right.
Who's open? Is Jalen Duren going to be open for a lob? Is Malcolm Dandridge going to be open for a lob? There was a play. He came around a ball screen, I believe, from Jalen Duren. Had the pocket, like, short roll pass open to Duren, who could then drive and had, like, a wide-open driving lane.
Yep.
Had a cross-corner kick if he really wanted it. I forget who was in the corner. It might have been Landers Nolly.
Mm-hmm.
And had a same side kick out as well because the defenders had decided to essentially stack the paint. And this was against Iowa State. Instead, he just puts his head down, drives into three defenders, turns it over.
Throws it
out. I think that most evaluators have seen the, like, crazy spinning, like, behind the back or behind the head pass
out of bounds mm-hmm.
that was not
ideal,
all that good.
Yeah.
Not ideal. Let's go with that. I agree with you totally that he's not a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
But even to play as a secondary ball handler and as a shot-creating wing, you still need to be able to make reads out of ball screens and still need to be able to make reads that get your teammates and your team more efficient shots. And again, this is going to be good for him to be at Memphis to take these lumps because he's 17. He would not have learned this in high school, would not have learned this stuff on the AAU circuit. Hopefully he will learn it at Memphis.
Right.
But that's the next step for Amani, because right now he is pretty harmful against good teams offensively because he doesn't make those reads. He's good in transition, but in half court settings, he's actually pretty harmful. And then we go to the defensive side.
Yes.
It's been bad. Like, there was a play that I sent you where they were in like a three-quarter court kind of like semi-press, I guess, let's say, like a soft press, and then sank back. And I think what was supposed to happen was they were supposed to sink back. So I went back and watched the next possession, and they were in like a similar style zone. And I think what was supposed to happen was they were supposed to sink back into like a 1-3-1, 2-3 hybrid kind of, like 3-2 hybrid kind of thing.
Yep.
And Imani did not know it and just chased his guy around to the other side of the court. And the spot where he was supposed to be on the left wing, who was it? I believe it was Gabe Kalscher, ended up with like a wide open three. Whenever teams attack him as a help defender, he just consistently ball watches and leaves his guy, and there's a kick out open every single time.
Yep.
He really needs to lock in on the defensive end, because there have been a lot of moments that have been very, very, very negative. I honestly would like to see Penny Hardaway start to like force some accountability and like take him off the court whenever he makes these mistakes, because some of them are like, I don't know what your thought process was there. And he's getting, like, you can see, like, against Iowa State, like, I forget, like, I think he turned the ball over at one point and like he fell on the ground and like had the ball in his hand still, and he slammed ball on the ground like three times, and Jalen Duren like went up to him and was like, hey dude, like, you know, it's really? All good. Like, we got you. It was like being a really good teammate. But like, you can see that he's starting to get a little bit frustrated as well, I think. And I'm a bit worried about Imani Bates right now.
They're stronger defenders too. I mean, Iowa State did a really good job of rotating and double teaming and stepping up in the paint too. That there's times, and it's still an adjustment for him, because he would get a friendly whistle in high school. People know who he is. Like, refs aren't going to come in and pretend like they don't know who he is. So when you go in the lane, you get hit, you're going to get a whistle. Some freshmen get them, sometimes you don't. I think his brain's a little bit cloudy coming off pick and rolls. And I think part of this developmental thing that we talk about is that he's never been a point guard. I know you have to know how to come off pick and rolls, but he's always been like one track minded where like, I'm going to get 40, so I'm coming off to look to score. I don't think he's been asked to really see the guy in the corner, the roll man, a short roll. So he's coming off like, freedom, I have a step, I need to shoot. As a point guard, that's very dangerous. Defensively, it's, there's some lost in space stuff there. No questions asked. Again, I'll just hammer this home. And why I said the day he signed and committed, and I stick true to this, Memphis was still the right place, because he's doing this, and we're talking about this, and I said I dreaded talking about this. This is not a national story. Like, people are kind of whispering about it, talking in basketball circles. This isn't the lead-in on SportsCenter that, you know, you lose by 20 and you're on the road, and it's a slow process being at Memphis. This wasn't at 9:30 in Vegas with 20,000 people and 100 NBA scouts. NBA scouts were there. I talked to people who left being like, this was a little bit disappointing, and left saying, wait a minute, Jalen Duren and Imani Bates combined for 0 points in the first half. Like, what am I watching? Why am I here and not in Vegas? It's going to get to that point. Like, people are going to start to poke holes eventually. But he's been able to – he hasn't warmed up, but there's more time on his clock to get there before people start really getting concerned. I'm worried. I'm worried, yes, to note that. But I'm not totally, like, off it quite yet, because I want to give him the benefit of playing 10 games as a 17-year-old.
Yeah, and – you know, we're talking about it now. I mean, we didn't lead with it on the podcast. We are not SportsCenter, obviously. A weirdly large number of people listen to this podcast for some reason. But
that's fine. They're fans of the bathroom art I have behind me, the tiling. It's actually peel-off wallpaper. My wife put it up. It's really nice. Anyway, I agree with you.
But yeah, like, we didn't lead with it because we don't think that, like, we think he's five games into his career.
Yeah.
And we want to be patient. Correct. On some level. I also just worry, like, so he's 6'8", let's say.
Okay. Yeah. That around that range. He's not 6'9". But I think I think he measured at what, 6'7"? They list him at 6'8" or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So 6'7", 6'8", something like that. Even wingspan. Doesn't have any real vertical pop in half court settings.
Right.
Very skinny frame. If he doesn't learn to make these high-level passing reads, what is the upside? Is kind of where I'm coming to with this.
That's the problem. If he doesn't hit shots, where does he go? If he can't finish, it would be one thing if he was shooting 45% from three, but hey, like at the rim, he's in the fifth percentile on synergy. Like that, okay, that's fixable. That's a weight room, that's reps, whatever. But when they're both bad, that's where you start to say, like, I don't know what that is then. Whereas we do have other freshmen and Caleb Houston and Max Christie that have been up and down, and we're kind of giving them a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt. It's harder for Amani because he had these unreal expectations as a
unfair, Frank.
Very unfair as this generational talent. It's, we've seen time and time again, like those guys, it's hard to reach that. And that's why you look at LeBron James, and it's just incredible that he's reached those heights and then some. For Imani, you're just always like living up to that. I'm sure it's an incredibly heavy burden to carry, but unfortunately, we're in a business, we're in an industry of evaluation and tens of millions of dollars spent on draft picks and people's livelihoods online if you miss, and he can't miss. So he's going to have to do more to gain more fans, and he has time. He's also not draft eligible, so this can be a conversation, again, we'll have five times in the next year. But there needs to be growth for the next time we talk.
Yeah, like, to me, this is not a we're writing Amani Bates off conversation.
No, not for
this
me.
Is a, okay, constructively, this is what we hope to see moving forward. This is where we think the spaces are where he can take a leap. And hopefully when we talk about him again in a month and a half or whatever, looks fine.
Yeah, right? This is like the halfway through the year progress report, parent-teacher conferences, when you're brought in and they say, hey, you know, like he's got 3 in effort. He's better than this. He can get to a 2-1 a little bit. This isn't a report card. This is a transcript. You know, we got time before those come out.
You got to start doing that with your son, who's like 2 years old. You got to, look, you're midway through, you know, your second year on Earth or your third year on Earth, I guess. We need you to take a step up.
Yeah, you have to advance beyond listening to only 2 Christmas songs. We're going to get to 4 next week. You got to relax. It's not always going to be NSYNC Christmas.
Yeah, those truck videos, we're going to cut those in half. We're going to start making you read Pick and Roll.
Yeah, he's smooth, man. He was I was trying to put him in bed last night, and I had the game on my laptop and the TV on trucks, and I turned off the TV smart, and nuzzled right up next to me. What's that boy's name? Watching Iowa, Virginia. I'm like, smart. You're smarter than me.
Just ready.
We're ready. He's ready. Breaking down film.
And he's a big kid too.
He is. You know,
takes after 6'8" Matthew Penny. We're ready to go here.
Luckily.
Okay. Speaking of Amani Bates, Jalen Duren is also on this team. I think Jalen Duren has just significantly, substantially been hindered by the lack of point guard here.
Yes.
Right now, what he would be best at offensively is just being a rim runner. I think he actually really needs to improve as a screen setter, for what it's worth. Like, there are some moments where he sets some really lazy screens, I think, and doesn't open up like space for someone like Amani Bates, someone like Alex Lomax, whoever is taking these screens. But I think he would be substantially helped by being able to catch lobs out of ball screens and having like Landers Nolly on the same side as the roll and forcing a tough decision where a tagger has to stay home on a shooter. Like, they have enough shooters to where you can make an offense work here, because Amani does get respected as a shooter at the very least.
Yep.
Lester Quinones, Landers Nolly, like those guys definitely get respected as shooters. You can run some real interesting same-side actions for them, but you need to be able to hit the passes. And in Jalen Duren's case, he needs to be able to roll the way to the rim and catch and finish. I like some of what I've seen on the offensive glass from him. I think he's been pretty active on that front. I don't think that his skill level is as high as what I had hoped coming into college basketball.
Right.
And that feels like a concern right now for me, given the way that the season seems to be progressing offensively, at least for Memphis.
The Jalen Duren that people have seen right now is not the Jalen Duren from high school. He's not the Jalen Duren from the summer, not from Jalen Duren from the preseason. It's just been ugly lately. It's lots of fouls, lots of turnovers. He's playing 20 minutes a night because he can't stay on the floor.
Yeah, I'll give him some leeway. I believe it was the Virginia Tech game. He picked up two fouls and then picked up a third one pretty early in the second half. Two of those fouls were just fucking terrible.
There's been a lot of ref shows, and he's a hard guard to referee and officiate because he is so big and strong.
Yeah.
And the scouting report's going to be take a charge, he hits you once, fall over. And it doesn't look like a flop because he's 6'10", built out of marble. His shot attempts, he was 3-for-7 against Virginia Tech, 1-for-4 against Iowa State.
Yeah.
He gets a panic when he's like double teaming the post. I think that's part of like the reads and processing thing. And then he gets frustrated. He'll take some early shots in the shot clock. He got charged, could call for a charge over a short roll. It's similar to Imani. Just like simplify what you're doing. Don't try to thread the needle with interior passes. He's had some like bad TOs doing that. If it's not there, you hit the wing, you dive, you repost, you get yourself going from 5 feet and in, and then everything else can work. You can do your little 12-foot face-up short jumpers. I'm also worried defensively. Like, he's not flying around the same way that he has been either. Those first 4 or 5 games, he had 4 or 5 blocks.
Yeah.
And he was, like, going nuts out there. Yeah. Like, which is weird because he has big feet, but sort of what I've said is he can move with said big feet. They're getting into the meat of their schedule now. Those shortcuts are going to be exposed even more. So I hope that he can kind of channel the Jalen Duren of the summer of he declares to go to Memphis early and people saying this is the top pick in the draft. This is a top 3 pick. He's sliding just a little bit. Like Imani, give him time. We got to give him 5-10 games. Thought he'd be just a little bit further along right here, right now.
Yeah, so, you know, they play the best antidote for any college basketball team right now, the Georgia Bulldogs on Wednesday.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, slump buster.
That'll be nice.
Yep.
Georgia, for people who have not been paying attention, is 2-5 and has lost to Wofford. Lost to Wofford at home. Gotten blown out by Northwestern, lost to Virginia, another team that was in desperate need of an antidote, lost to Georgia Tech, who was another team in desperate need of an antidote after losing to Miami, Ohio, to start the season.
Good curve.
They played a tough one with FIU to start the year, so I would hope. Look, if they play poorly against Georgia, that's where the flags start coming out.
That's where you start to get a little bit too worried. The worry turns real.
Okay. Let's go away from Memphis. Let's talk about Gonzaga and Duke.
Yeah.
Interesting game. Great game. I did not watch it live. It was right as I was sitting down to do Thanksgiving dinner on Saturday here in Australia. What an incredible game. Like, it was such an incredible game that, like, every time they would pan over to Mark Few, he was just smiling. Like, you could see the one time that he says, Nolan Hickman, like, go in. And they panned the camera to him as Hickman was sitting at the scorer's table. And he goes up to Hickman. It just looks like he said to him, like, hey, you're about to enter a really fucking great game.
Yeah.
Like, he was loving it.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, like, Coach K goes up to him and he's, like, somber. He's, you know, like, oh, man, so sorry that we just beat you. Like, everything. Mark had, like, the biggest smile on his face. He was just like, That was amazing. Like, yeah, it looked like that,
a very similar reaction to, I don't know if you saw when Kansas lost to Dayton with like that back rim and the ball goes sky high and it falls back in. Dayton's going nuts. They're going crazy. And normally, like, when coaches lose like that, they storm off. Bill Self smiling. Go through the line like, hey, man, great shot. Yeah. That was awesome. I don't know if these guys are itchy to play college basketball games again, but they're all taking it a lot better in stride than you would expect.
Totally. Yeah, I loved it. Okay, so the first half of that game was the Paolo Banchero show.
Oh, yeah.
He had 20, I think, in the first half. Yeah. Right? Just all sorts of ridiculous pull-ups, all sorts of unbelievable created shots. It was a very, very impressive half of basketball from Paolo. What do you have to say? Let's just kind of
he was great. He was, and he definitely won the battle with Chet Holmgren. Which the irony is that Chet has generally had his number when they've faced off. I actually do want to call out. We're talking fun. Let's stay on fun. It was great that the game started and Chet Holmgren was guarding Paolo Banchero and Paolo Banchero was guarding Chet Holmgren. So often you get these games and they're guarding other people and they end up switching later because Chet got into foul trouble and he realized he could hide a little bit, take a few plays off, and Paolo was not going to let you take a few plays off when he had the ball. I like Paolo's aggressiveness. He went right at Chet the first possession. He hit a mid-range shot the next. Falling touch, he hit a three in transition. We've talked about how he's the king of this mid-range jumper. I looked on Synergy as I was kind of like doing my own little research here. He actually ranks in the 100th percentile. He is first in the country in mid-range jump shots, points per possession. Like that's actually statistically how good he is there. And if he becomes this knockdown shooter in transition from the corners, he's 7-for-16 in his last three games. Man, that's a scary prospect. It is. If you're able to keep those driving lanes open and hit shots, I mean, that's a really, really scary thing. Now, the negatives, he can take some crazy fadeaways that you have to live with, and then he'll make up for it a play later. But everything, the way he approached the game and went right at Chet, he backed up the hype he received all year. He had 21 points on 8-for-17 shooting. He likely would have had 30 or 35 if it weren't for cramping issues, which – is a Duke thing now. Like they cramped against Kentucky, they cramped here against Gonzaga. I don't know the issue. I'm not a medical professional. I don't post myself on Facebook about the medical world, and I'm not a trainer, but not really something to track. Overall, he was everything we wanted to be.
Yeah, everything that we could have hoped for from Paolo. I don't really have anything to add to that. I mean, we talked a lot about Paolo after the Champions Classic. It was a lot of the same here, just a lot of ridiculously high-level shot creation. He had two really impressive drives, I thought, to the rim, both with the right hand, one of them right through Chet Holmgren, right through his chest. And I think that is where I would start with Chet now, is I thought Chet looked pretty solid for the most part. The thing that Chet is going to have to, and has already started to figure out, like, how to do, I don't mean this as a, this is, like, where he desperately has to improve. He's a lot more effective as a defender when he has his body off of the man, as opposed to when he has to, like, load up and someone tries to go through his chest, right? Mm-hmm. And that's obvious, right? Like, you know, Chet is 7 foot. 185, 195 pounds, right? I'd imagine that he's starting to lose weight, as guys are wont to do throughout the season. Just kind of happens with the way that works. You have less time to bulk and like put on muscle mass throughout the year.
Yep.
So, you know, you're running and playing basketball, you're just going to kind of naturally lose weight throughout the year. It's going to be interesting to see how he holds up in that respect, because there were a couple moments where I thought that when guys wanted to go through his chest, they didn't really have as many problems as I would have hoped that he could have possibly even presented. But when he's away from the body, I mean, there are very few, let's say, defenders in college basketball who are as impactful as Chet Holmgren can be.
I may be in the minority here. I was actually enthused. The internet was very quick to trash him in the first half. It was over. Right, Paolo went. He's the number one pick. You guys are idiots. Well, what are people watching? Because Paulo got him. He did. Like, hard stop. Got him. What I've said time and time again about Chet Holmgren, going back to high school, is that he's not scared. He's not afraid. He's not going to run. Yes, he might be scored through, like the player alluding to with Paolo Banchero. Mark Williams dunked on his head and did, like, the head tap thing. Like, yes, I dunked on you. He doesn't care. He just runs back. He took a three the next possession. He doesn't mope. He doesn't pout. He still had 16, 7, and 3 blocks. And then I love seeing that slender frame, like, kind of withstand some bumps. Not all. Like, withstood some and then kind of recovered and blocked shots. NBA front offices are going to have very difficult decisions to make at the top of this draft. Because if you want the instant gratification right now, you probably take Paolo, right? Like, if you're...
Yeah,
the Pistons. You need to win. Like, Troy Weaver's done a good job building that team, a lot of young pieces. I don't know if you have the patience for Chet to kind of fill out and be the guy that he can be. If you have patience, Chet's the guy because he's going to get a long look because of everything else he brings. And if you have enough belief and potentially imagination, if he can put on weight, then you have to envision him as a prospect with 20 more pounds. So, yes, Chet took the L. Paolo was the win there, but there was enough that I left away with positive thoughts based on I thought Paolo was going to break him in half, and Chet was still able to, like, leave his mark, leave his imprint while losing, and not necessarily, like, taking this nosedive as a prospect either.
I don't know if I want to get into this on this podcast, but there is a third guy in that number one overall pick race, mm-hmm. and... the more I think about the potential of his game, the more I really like Jabari Smith
this is a really good cliffhanger for the next pod. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that next episode. Yeah. We'll do like
we're in an hour. I think Jabari's worth his own 15-minute segment too.
Yeah, no, he is, and we have been going for long enough now. So I do want to talk about Mark Williams though.
Yes, because a couple of guys here still.
Mark Williams, I thought, was the most important, most impactful player in that game, full stop. He was utterly elite across the board defensively. There is no ifs, ands, buts, whatever you want to say about it. That dude was absolutely incredible in that game defensively. Around the basket, with his hands, reading ball screens. Gonzaga is not an easy team to defend out of their ball screen actions. Mark Williams made it look easy. He completely shut down the paint. He had 6 blocks. I thought that 2 of his like potential blocks.
One of them was not a foul. Yeah, it was bad. Fouls on. The Timmy one was really bad. Yeah.
It was incredibly impressive. And oh, by the way, I mean, what? He had 17 points, if I remember correctly, and like 9 rebounds. It was, if you're a fan of Mark Williams, and I am a fan of Mark Williams. Like, I think he's a starting center in the NBA long term. It was everything that you would hope to see from him in a game like that. I was blown away by what he was able to show.
Yeah, 8 for 9 from the field. Last year, and I'm wrong, I'll raise my hand, and Duke was a very interesting also case study last year because you had so much other stuff going on that I kind of wrote him off as a little bit as fool's gold because it's the end of the year. They needed somebody to score, needed somebody to get rebounds. So he had all these touches. I didn't think that he would kind of live up to that. I think he's been even better as a prospect. And that game, he was everywhere. He was dunking. He was blocking shots. He was making his presence felt. It was defense to offense. One of the first plays of the game, he blocks Chet at the rim. Sprints up the middle of the court, like sprints past Drew Timmy, catches it and scores.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where he's just rotating, he's catching, he's finishing lobs. I like his feet, his footwork on pick and rolls too. He's not going to travel if it's a bad pass. He has pretty good fluidity there. He hit a lefty hook,
he's really, really good at opening up his body and creating a really big target for his guards to hit while also taking up a lot of space and sealing off potential defenders on the catch.
Yeah, I liked everything I saw. I think you're right. He's efficient. He scored. He rebounded. He defended. He did everything you want for a starting center.
Have you ever seen Drew Timmy struggle as much with a player at the basket trying to score? I have not.
In that description, no, but kind of like, I was just had flashbacks to the Baylor game, all the ball screens, and he just wasn't the same. And Timmy still got his points, but you saw sort of the pro limitations where Mark Williams is an NBA center. This is the size you're going to face. In the first couple of possessions, he was blocked. He kind of leaned into him. Like, he was a non-factor for a long time because he wasn't used to playing that type of player. We didn't see the mustache dance too much that night. Like, he kept the mustache in his bag for Mark Williams and Paolo. And I'll give Timmy credit for bouncing back a little bit, but he did not win that battle in the post.
No, he didn't. The other guy we have to talk about, I think, is Wendell Moore here. I loved Wendell Moore coming out of high school. Loved him.
Me too.
I thought he was, like, so skilled, so polished. Like, he was more of a driver in high school, obviously still is. He's improved a little bit as a shooter. But I really, really loved everything. He was 6'5". He has, like, a 6'11 wingspan. I was so impressed in the first 2 years of not gone well. Like, it seemed like there was a real athletic adjustment for him to college basketball in learning how to use his frame, learning how to create shots for himself. I love what I've seen from him so far. I think he is probably, I don't know, like all of Keels, Paolo, obviously, Mark Williams, they're all incredibly important to Duke. I've seen some people make the case that he's their most important player. I don't think I would go that far, but he is incredibly valuable to them on the wing because he is like a steady presence out there that knows what he's doing. My concern on Wendell Moore as an NBA player is he's not a great shooter and is not like a super athlete on defense.
Yep.
And I worry about what the role looks like. But throughout the year, he's been an excellent passer. He's made every right read, I think. He's a good rebounder. He gets to the rim. He's made shots so far. We'll see if that lasts.
Yep.
I've been very impressed with Wendell Moore. He's definitely helped himself. I don't think I would have him as a first rounder right now, but I think he's been very, very good. Very, very good.
He's close for me. He is. He's right there. It's weird because everything like you, I liked him as a top 30 guy at high school. I thought he sort of lost his way last season, and they needed him. I mean, the Jalen Johnson experiment didn't work. They thought he would kind of be the torch carrier offensively, and then Mark Williams is really good. Matthew Hurt carried a heavy offensive load. They needed him, and he wasn't good. Like, I didn't think that he would become this guy. And as an outsider and not having any intel on Duke in their locker room, it feels to me like he settled into being a high-level complementary piece where he can become the guy when needed, whereas last year they needed him to be the guy, and maybe that was just too much. Like, that was too much for him, and he couldn't really, like, take that on as a sophomore. Now his numbers have improved everywhere. He had 20 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. All his movements offensively seem so much more natural. Like, he's not overthinking, do I pass, do I shoot, whatever. Like, the ball gets reversed. It's a quick move. It doesn't stick to him. He's using his frame better, I think, too, to get in the paint and embrace in contact with the rotating big while powering through. Overall, the aggression is advanced for where it's been. And on defense, I do have similar issues, but he will pressure the ball. He'll get up there and defend. Like, his size, like his wingspan, he's close. He's really close. And he deserves credit. He took, like some of these guys, they just, for Duke, it seems especially, sometimes when you get to Duke, you get to that second year, years 3 and 4 just mirror year 2. And that's all right. Like, he averaged 9 points per game. Just be that guy, a 4-year Duke guy. But he's asserted himself as, like, no, I am a Duke guy, yes. But, like, I'm also a first-round NBA prospect.
Yeah, I agree with that. The last guy I think that I do want to mention here is Julian Strother.
Ooh, buddy.
We talked about on the podcast, kind of previewing the Duke Gonzaga game that we recorded, the Fact or Fiction podcast about whether or not Gonzaga has multiple first round picks. That was a Matthew Penny special.
Oh yeah.
I also like Julian Strother for what it's worth, but I'm going to give Penny here the credit on this one. Julian Strother goes for 20 points. I don't know how much of it was like super translatable. Some of them were like floaters in transition. Some of them were like wide open threes. I'd like to see him make threes a little bit more off of movement. But he scored 20 points against Duke in a matchup of top 2 teams in the country for my money. And he did it with excellent touch. So it was an impressive game, I thought.
Yeah, 6'7", three-level scorer. And last night he wasn't great against Tarleton State, but he's averaging 15-6. Prior to last night, he was shooting 54 from the field, 47 from three, 75% from the free throw line. He can be a cutter. He can be a slasher. He's great not having to have the ball in his hands, similar to like Kendall Brown a little bit, where he'll just like back cut and get a touch, reverse it if it's not there.
Yep.
The shots in front of his face, it's a little bit funky, but he does these little sneaky things where Drew Timmy's blocked by Mark Williams, the crowd erupts, and he just like sneaks in for rebound and scores. Like that's what he can do. And off the bounce, he has a little bit of a floater, can finish at the rim. In 30 seconds, sell me on how he's not a top 25 pick. In a weaker draft, yeah, we're searching. Like it's hard for me as I work on the board to not have him there.
Yeah, so I don't think you're wrong to have him there right now. I probably would not. I'm a little bit worried about the athleticism on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see a little bit more from him in regard to his passing as well. Right now, the role is so simplified. Hey, back cut, shoot, find little ways in for floaters, all of that stuff. Like, that's a really, really good role for him, and it's an important role for Gonzaga within that offense. Now, if he can defend, I think that the passing is less important. I would just like to see more tape, I guess, from him defensively.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not sure where he's going to settle in on that end. He's not a crazy athlete. Like, he is 6'7". I would guess, like, he's not – he doesn't have short arms. Like, I would guess, like, probably 6'10 wingspan, something like that.
Yeah, probably in that range. It's not negative. I'll say that.
Yeah, so really impressed with Julian Strother. I think he is in the mix for the 2022 draft. I will be interested to see if he ends up doing and going through with the 2022 draft, given Gonzaga's track record of typically keeping guys for a year beyond what like we think that they typically should or do.
Yep, fair point.
Okay. Last little section here, we want to highlight two prospects. We'll call them like the quote-unquote NBA draft prospects of the week, the game theory prospects of the week. As you can tell, I took a lot of thought into this. So really, we just want to talk about two guys.
Just branding.
Okay. The game theory prospects of the week. Matthew Penny, give me yours to start.
I feel like I was bamboozled here a little bit, but we should at least talk about Keegan Murray from Iowa. I know we both watched the game last night.
These prospects aren't necessarily the guys that we're most impressed with. They're just guys we want to talk about.
Yeah, and not total hipster. He's ranked 247th, but he's got a shot. He's got a chance. Maybe yours is, but I circled last night. Iowa played Virginia because Keegan Murray was leading the nation in scoring, rebounding, blocking shots, but was doing it against just not the highest level of competition. So I was excited about Virginia. And then he had 18-6. It was just kind of like a lukewarm 18-6. Like, he tried early to beat his man off the bounce. Didn't really happen. So he went to some quick post-ups, was scoring there. He kept going to that from, like, the pinch post, knowing he had room and space to operate. He'd ball fake, and defenders would go off him a little bit. Defense, I thought he overcommitted. He did find, like, cutters here and there. But is there, like, it was just underwhelming, right? It's like the game was on the line. He wasn't the guy to have the ball. They weren't even really looking for him. He got hurt, so he's out a little bit. His twin brother, Chris, was a little bit more aggressive out there, like, finding his own shot. So he plays Purdue.
Hot take, I do not want Chris Murray to be the more aggressive Murray.
Murray 2. I tweeted this. They're twins, and one's a righty, one's a lefty. That would freak me out. Then somebody, I think Draft Deeper, somebody tweeted me and said, what if one wore number 15 and one wore 51? So that would really mess me up. Anywho, I'm not writing him off. I thought kind of like top 20-ish guy. He was fine. 18-6 is not bad. It just had to be more to get me excited. I'm hoping Purdue, and I think they have Illinois after that, he'll get his chances to show what he's able to do, because in the games of four, he showed he could pick and pop, he can hit some threes, he can get out in transition, he can rebound, he can dunk over guys, get to the free throw line. We didn't see the whole package last night.
Yeah, none of it was particularly translatable last night.
Yeah,
Let's just say that. Like, it was no NBA team's going to run, like, pinch post, empty out the side for Keegan Murray.
Clear out. Right? Wave him out. Get out of here. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he made a catch-and-shoot three that was really impressive, I thought. Like, that was the one moment where I was like, okay, like, this is an important moment for him. He had a couple of strong contests at the basket. Like, you texted me, like, what do we think he is, small ball five, potentially? Or can he play some small ball five? He had a couple of contests last night at the basket that made me think that could be a possibility in the right situation. I want to see more of that, obviously, but... Yeah, it wasn't like an overly impressive game. Iowa kind of pissed it away down the stretch before a Joe Toussaint, like, weird mid-range shot.
Off the glass.
Yeah.
You kind of stopped. You could pay, like, half attention. You kept looking back. It's like, it's 10, it's 8, it's tied game. They're losing. What's going on here? Let me dial back in. The 5 thing just came to me a little bit because – the foot speed defensively is a 4. I don't know if we're there, and we'll have to see more. And that's why I was drawn to the 5. You said, well, he's got to protect the rim. He'll contest. He had 4 blocks a game early in the year against, like, probably playing a 6'6" center. That's not the same as playing Mark Williams at 6'11" with a 7'9" wingspan. So there's adjustments to be made. More games to watch.
Okay, my prospect of the week here is Jake LaRavia, who is a player that. Matt has not seen play yet.
It's great. At the very least. Right, because we have all day before the prep. I'm watching. I'm like, I got time to watch film. And you hit me with this big whammy before we record. So I'm going to give you the floor because I have not watched Wake Forest yet up to this point in the season.
Yeah. He's a young Matt Penny. He's a 6'8" white kid currently playing for Wake Forest.
Yeah.
He is awesome. Like, he essentially, like, runs their offense as a 6'8", I don't even know, like, a point forward, like, almost a guard. His feel for the game is absolutely outstanding. He throws passes that nobody else on Wake Forest even, like, comes close to seeing. Like, I think they're surprised when he, like, throws, like, a cross-corner chest pass from the top of the key and, like, drills it right in the shooter's pocket. I think he's a skilled shooter. Definitely has really good touch. You watch him around the basket. You watch him shoot once he gets space to gather and set his feet. The ball looks great coming out of his hand. I think that he just needs to speed up the release a little bit. Great off-ball cutter. Phenomenal off-ball player. Really understands how to play without the basketball. Really understands how to play with the basketball. Incredible hand-eye coordination. Really, really good defensively, despite the fact that he's not, like, the fleetest of foot. Knows how to just be disruptive by being able to, like, get his hands in the action and, like, making things miserable for opposing players. I was very impressed. Like, I watched LSU Wake because I was like, okay, I need to get eyes on Darius Days. I guess I should take a look at Efton Reed. Like, okay, let's see what we've got here. I came away thinking Jake LaRavia was the best player on the court.
Those are the best guys to find when you're not looking. You're finding the prospect, and you said, who's that guy? Like, I think you said about John Butler, who we'll get there. We'll get him as prospect of the week. With Wake's schedule, I think they have another game or two non-conference, but he'll have plenty of chances, plenty of opportunities to play against high-level guys. I'm already looking. We'll circle January 12th as Duke-Wake Forest, the LaRavia Bankero Bowl.
I can't emphasize enough. Duke is going to fucking boat race that team.
Okay. Well, that's bold, like, they material. Took, that's going up in the locker room.
Jake LaRavia, they took him off the court when he got his second foul with, like, I think it was, like, the TV timeout with 4 minutes left in the first half. They scored 2 points the rest of the half and could barely get the ball across half court because LSU obviously, like, presses and, like, you know, really hits at the point of attack. It was rough.
I have a good quick boat race story. I don't know, have I ever told you the Marty Collins Temple story when we played them?
I don't know if you have.
All right, so stop me if you have. But what happens was we beat Temple at home by like 30. I actually played. I hit a shot at the end of the game on ESPN, a highlight package for when Game Theory wins the countless awards that we win in the future. But Marty Collins, who is a pro, played for the Knicks for a while.
First round pick, baby.
He came out in the newspaper before we played at Temple and said, we're going to beat them by 30. Okay, so this is before the game. So the managers at UMass in our visiting locker room, our managers before the game, the coaches printed out the quote and plastered it over the locker room. It was everywhere. So you walked in, it was everywhere. Great motivational thing. I'm like, all right, I'm going to kill these guys. We were in rough shape. One of our better players was sick. We're coming off, I don't know, not playing well. They won by 29. It was like, this guy called his shot. In the dartboard, he hit the bullseye, wave goodbye. I said 30, it was 29, my bad, keep the change. And I was like, this guy is a professional athlete. He'll be in the NBA, and this is what pros do in the Atlantic 10.
Well, you know what the key of that story is?
Should you not have shot it at the buzzer.
With that late three-pointer to stop Marty Collins' prediction from coming true.
No, that was the game before. That's the thing. We beat him at home by like 30, and then he said next game we're going to get him by 30, and they actually did.
Oh, God, yeah.
I wish. If I covered the fake spread that he made, that would have been even a little bit more bittersweet. That's a better bar story if it ended that way. It didn't, unfortunately.
We haven't done Matt Penny story time in a while.
No, that's a good one. Yeah, that was natural. That was a good one.
We need the Matt Penny recruiting stories.
Yeah, we can get there. There's plenty of those.
Oh man, Penny! Before we get out of here, any movies that you have seen recently?
I watched one documentary. I watched the Alanis Morissette Music Box documentary.
Okay.
HBO Max. That was good. I'm probably dating myself a little bit, but I remember being younger.
Right in the pocket for Alanis Mania.
Yeah. Right. It was. Yeah, when You Ought to Know, when Jagged Little Pill came out, it was such a movement, and I liked it. I liked seeing her process, and they asked the radio DJ. It happened all so fast. It's like she wins Best New Artist. She'd been in music for like 10 years. It happens all the time with the Grammys. So like they brought the disc to K-Rock out in California. The DJ played it up at 10 and said, we're going into the booth right now and playing this. And they played You Ought to Know, and they said, did the rock space have room for Alanis Morissette? They said, no, we couldn't even play back-to-back women on the radio at that point. But she was so powerful, and the music was so relatable across genders that, like, they didn't have a choice. And it's the best, I think it's the second highest selling album of the 90s, which is pretty incredible. So, yeah, I recommend it.
I listened to Jagged Little Pill, like, when I was, what, 15? Something like that? Because that had been like even 2005.
I think it was 96 or something like that. But it all happened so fast. She was a megastar, like legitimately overnight.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely nuts. I watched King Richard yesterday.
I need the review there because I've heard mixed things, mixed bag.
I don't understand why the movie is centered on him.
Okay.
I think is my problem. The movie never makes a compelling case for why it's centered around him, and in fact makes a case for why it should have been centered around Venus Williams.
Will Smith, Academy Award, does it happen?
I don't think it should. I'll say that. Look, we'll see. I don't think he's bad. Like, I don't think that like the performance is bad. I think he's pretty good in it, to be honest. I can't imagine that there won't be better performances as we start getting into some of these Oscar contenders later in the year. Like, look, he would not be, I mean, what, I've seen 190 movies this year.
this year?
In like 2021
releases.
Like, jeez, man. Yeah, like not older movies. Like, I've probably seen 100 and maybe 170 2021 releases. Wow. Like,
it is impressive. That's a lot of movies. It's a lot.
It's a lot of movies.
A lot of new releases, anyway.
Yeah, would not. I mean, like, look, like, I thought that, like, Anthony Ramos in The Heights was, like, drastically better than he was.
Right, yep.
But that's also not going to get nominated because that movie, like, died on the vine. Mm-hmm. So, what else? I watched The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which is the Jessica Chastain movie.
Sure. Seen it. Not the movie. I've seen the ad, I believe.
Yeah, good. I thought it was good. I liked it a little bit more than I liked King Richard. She's really good. And Andrew Garfield is really, really good. Like, really, really good. Both, like, I would be okay with both of them getting nominated for an Academy Award more than I would be okay with Will Smith getting nominated.
Yeah, there hasn't been a ton of newer releases yet that have piqued my interest, but King Richard was on the list to watch. I also started watching that Music Box series on HBO Max. They also had one on DMX, so I'm like halfway through that one. It's DMX once he gets out from tax evasion and prison. It's kind of, and spoiler alert, DMX passed away, unfortunately. But I think it's like kind of his last tour and last hurrah. And it's heavy, man. It's like you don't see the celebrity side of it, whereas just everyone's always asking for a handout, a picture, X, can I get this, can I get that? And I remember at Celtics game, man, I guess 4 or 5 years ago now, one of the buddies had passes to go to, there's like a restaurant bar that you can go at halftime if you have like good seats. We had one pass for two people. We kind of like snuck in behind, I won't say the name, but one of the Celtics owners, and the security's like, it's same with you. Like, yeah, we're good. Yeah, see you later. We're tall, so it's like you blend in, like he kind of could be there. And he was there. DMX was there. He actually just got out. And it was cool to see him, but also sad because you're just become this like punchline for pictures and selfies and mixtape dropping soon and hey, do the Rudolph thing. So you become a caricature of yourself, and I'm sure it was a heavy thing for him to carry too. But the movie, the documentary has been good so far.
Interesting. Yeah, I will be interested to watch those because I did not really like the first Music Box one.
The Woodstock one? Yeah, not great.
Yeah.
Woodstock's not great.
But I am excited to watch the Alanis Morissette and DMX ones because I'm sure they're actually really good.
Yeah.
The weird one that I'm excited to watch is like Kenny G because they're doing a Kenny G one.
I can do some Kenny G.
I don't listen to Kenny G at all. I'm just like fascinated by like the idea of him.
Totally.
Like the fact that he is like a star in the way that he is. Like that is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. You learn something new you didn't know about the behind the scenes, which is always like my my point of involvement and why I love those things.
Penny, tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
On the internet, you find me here if you click this video and it actually posted. If not, I'm I'm on Twitter, @Matt_Penny. Find me there. We have plenty of draft stuff, videos, scorching hot takes. We have something for everybody.
Awesome. Love it. Go rate, review, subscribe to the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember to do all of those things. Our Black Friday deal at The Athletic is done, but if you use the link, theathletic.com/gametheory, you will be able to subscribe for 33% off of a yearly subscription still. I think that's all that I've got for you on my end. I don't know if I'm going to write anything. I wrote a ton last week. I don't know if I have anything like on the docket. I'm actually like 5 minutes late for a call with my editor.
Perfect. So, We're out. They're at the curtains. We're done. Sandman.
Should probably move forward with this podcast ending. So again, please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back next week with more, and I will have a couple of NBA shows later this week to catch up on Suns, Warriors, and all of the fun stuff that happens across the league. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.